Hello, and welcome to the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power Podcast, Up Your Sales in a Down Market, Winning Over Cautious Customers. I'm your host, Nancy Bacala, Senior Director of Online Content for the AMA, and we're very excited to welcome our special guest, Ron Volper, who's a leading authority on business development and author of the new book, Up Your Sales in a Down Market, 20 Strategies to Win Over Cautious Customers. As managing partner of the Ron Volper Group, Building Better Sales Teams, he has advised 90 Fortune 500 companies and many mid-sized companies on how to increase sales in tough times and good times. And he has trained over 30,000 salespeople and executives over the past 25 years. He is an adjunct faculty member at New York University and a sought-after speaker. For more information about Ron, you can visit his site at ronvolpergroup.com. Ron, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Nancy. A pleasure to be with you.
You know, during this recession, marketing and sales professionals really felt some of the deepest cuts. We're coming out of that a little bit, but what do you think the impact of those resourcing decisions have been on organizations and brands today?
It's an excellent question. In the short term, it's been helpful for business-to-business companies in that it's helped their bottom-line profitability. In the medium and longer term, I think it's hurt them a lot. And many of them don't realize it. Many of them have done exactly the wrong thing. They've cut marketing and sales expenses, and as a result, their top-line revenues, market share, and future growth has suffered. If you look at other economic downturns, the most dramatic being the Great Recession, as you know, of the 30s, several icons of American business, such as Ford Motor Company, literally shot themselves in the foot, or maybe we can say shot themselves in the tires, by cutting advertising and marketing at a time when they essentially owned the market. And using Ford Motors as just one example, they own the industry. They created not just the automobile, but the industry, and had 100% market share. Henry Ford's brother-in-law came to him and said, you know, we're experiencing some resistance and so on. We need to advertise our product as this upstart General Motors is doing. And Henry Ford not only said no, but being a very strong-minded individual, to say the least, fired his brother-in-law. Ford, in the last eight decades after then, with just 2 years as an exception, has dramatically trailed General Motors in market share and profitability. And there are other reasons as well, for sure. But one of the reasons is they decided to cut advertising at the very point when they needed it most. It now requires more impacts, more touches to persuade customers who are scared and skittish.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. You know, and sort of to piggyback on that, you recently conducted some interesting analysis of about 75 major companies, which revealed that the strength of a company's sales team and sales culture really directly correlates with its revenue, earnings, and market share, as you were just sort of alluding to. Can you share with our audience a little bit more about details about this insight, and what do you think are the key success drivers of this?
Absolutely. The key success drivers of a company that's going to gain market share, that's going to build top-line revenue, that's going to not only survive but thrive in a downturn especially, is that they've not cut their marketing and sales budget. They've not cut salespeople and customer service representatives. They've held steady and in some cases even increased it. They recognize that it takes more now to convince customers who, as I mentioned earlier, as you know, Nancy, are more cautious and more scared. So these are the companies that are doing more training and coaching. They're spending more time at sales meetings motivating their salespeople. They're providing them with recognition reward trips. They're giving them both financial rewards and non-financial rewards. They're giving them not only trips but pats on the back. The companies that are doing well, just as one small indicator, do not have a cap on their compensation plan for salespeople. Mm-hmm. Because in having that, you're basically telling salespeople, when you get to this level of production, stop selling. And it's a message which, of course, is unintended, but salespeople in a business-to-business environment particularly are pretty savvy and will read between the lines. In those companies as well, the executives, not just the sales and marketing folks, but the chief financial officer, the CEO, the chief operating officer, even folks from IT will go out on sales calls because they need to understand their customers at a deeper level and understand the change in buying behavior. So analysts typically don't look at it, but in our view, they're making a huge mistake. There's a very strong correlation, nothing is perfect, but a very strong one, between the strength of what we call a company's sales operating system, others might call it a sales culture, and how successful they're going to be in the near term and intermediate term.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I don't think many organizations are looking at it that way for sure. You've also noted that buying behavior, you think, for both B2B and B2C has really changed, yet companies, you know, have not effectively altered their approach to selling products and services, and I would think this is especially true for B2B. Can you share your perspective of where organizations are going wrong in their approach?
Absolutely. Again, just to reiterate, at a B2B level, decisions that previously were made by first-line managers or even supervisors are now being made by middle managers and even senior executives. Decisions that were previously made by individuals are now being made by buying committees. So companies are buying less and buying later. They're pilot testing, they're trying, they're demanding more proof of the return on investment, etc. The companies that are the most successful are having their salespeople call much higher in the organization. They're working the hall, so to speak. They're making more contacts throughout the organization because they realize there's just so much turmoil and personnel change within the organization. And finally, they're not taking customers for granted because customer loyalty now is much thinner than ever before. For a small difference in price, many will go across the street or across the globe. So the companies that are the most successful are having their representatives, salespeople, and executives really spend a lot more time with people who they might consider customers, but who might not consider themselves customers. So the maintaining of relationships is really critical for so many reasons. And finally, as you know, the longer a company remains a customer, most often the more profitable that relationship becomes. There's a 25 times greater likelihood that an existing customer will buy more from a company than that a new customer or a potential customer will buy anything.
That's a really good point. The other issue that is, of course, on everyone's mind these days is social media, and specifically, you know, how social channels can benefit B2B brands or brands in general in the sales function. So what's your take on using these social vehicles as true sales channels?
I think they should use it. I think it's proven effective. I think it's still very much in turmoil, and time will tell how important it is in the B2B environment. It's more definitively successful in the B2C channel. I think companies should never abandon high touch, regardless of how much they use high tech, regardless of how much they use social media, because fewer of their competitors are doing it. I think now's the time for them to use the traditional methods more than most are doing it. Most have cut their advertising and marketing budgets, and that's a mistake because, as I say, and as you know, customers are more vulnerable and less loyal, and it now requires 8 impacts to have a decision maker make a decision generically, whereas before 2008, it only took 5. I say only, 5 was not a piece of cake either, but that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference, and it gets back to what I mentioned earlier, Nancy. Companies are buying less, and they're buying later. It takes more to convince them.
It's ironic that we actually are looking at traditional methods now as a competitive advantage. So it's kind of an interesting insight there. You know, you've talked a little bit about what you think brands are getting wrong in this space, but can you point any brands or organizations you think that are getting it right?
Yes, you're quite right. First, if I may, a moment on what they're getting wrong. I think the degradation of their product is a huge issue, and I think many companies, the great majority, are making a mistake by degrading their product. Mm. If I can pick on one on the negative side, I made the mistake to give a personal quick story of mentioning to my wife that in my last physical, my sugar level was a little high, so my wife hid the cookies from me. I looked long and hard and finally found Pepperidge Farm Milano cookies hidden in a very good place, and I thought I was triumphant, but I realized that the Milano cookie package, the individual cookies, are a lot smaller.
Yeah.
And I must say, I was very unhappy about that. And that, they're by no means alone by that. I think that's hidden price inflation. I don't think that's the way that companies build great brands, even though they've got a great product. I think Snapple has done an excellent job early on by seizing on the environmental consciousness, you know, only the great things on earth, the good things on earth go into that brand, and I think it's caught on. I think brands that have done particularly well with advertising are the ones that still use animals and babies. Geico's Gecko, I think, has become an icon. I think people enjoy watching that. I think E-Trade has really overcome so much of their problems, and part of it is because of their great advertising with the baby who's being fitted for a suit by his personal tailor. I think as an industry that's looked at very critically and to some extent for good reason, still has some standouts. And by that, I mean the banking industry. J.P. Morgan Chase has done a very good job in preserving their brand and guarding against so much of the negative fallout that others like Citicorp and Bank of America have faced, and understandably. So even in the face of consumer discontent, let's call it, they've managed to protect and defend their brand and make terrific inroads and move further. Final example would be Verizon. People like to criticize the cell phone industry and so on, but compared to AT&T, clearly they've distinguished themselves as, if not the good guy, at least not the bad guy.
Well, those are really great examples. Sometimes we forget the ones that are doing it right and just kind of point out the ones that are not. So those are great examples for marketers to look at. You also mentioned that, some organizations obviously are not succeeding in the area of sales and lead gen and conversion perhaps as they should. What, in your opinion, is holding them back?
They're not spending enough time, money, resources on sales and sales marketing. The organizations that are succeeding in this environment are doing a number of things differently. But one is their sales representatives, particularly those selling in a business-to-business relationship-driven environment, realize that they need to have the salespeople do sales marketing. They need to figure out where to show up and when and for what purpose. Most salespeople are very good when they get there. They're good at the face-to-face or face-to-phone communication, but only the top 10% are really good at sales strategy, at sales marketing. In addition to what the organization needs to do, they need to do more to reach out to customers, to have what I call an impact management strategy, which is a fancy way of saying, which accounts do I need to spend more time with, both to protect and defend and expand relationships, and how much time and in what form do I show up? Do I show up face-to-face or over the phone or by email? or by sending a note card. And as an aside, I think there's a huge opportunity. Again, it gets back to high touch. I spend a lot of our budget on engraved stationery and note cards and send lots of handwritten notes because no one else does, and it stands out. I'm constantly writing personal notes on birthdays and anniversaries and congratulatory notes both for the company and the individual I'm dealing with, and I get a lot of good feedback because, again, so few others are doing that. So the high-touch method is important. Having an overall sales marketing strategy is important. Continually aligning what the salespeople do with the company's marketing vision is very important. Having the salesperson be a business advisor, an advocate, an uncle, rather than just sell a product. Having the salespeople present information and ideas, I think that's absolutely critical.
So it sounds like really what we're looking at is redefining that whole sales function and how sales is really conducted today in organizations, which is really some great points for organizations out there listening.
Absolutely true.
Finally, Ron, I just wanted to wind up with one last question here, and that's what advice do you have then for B2B organizations and marketers in general to help drive change in this area? Because, you know, it's certainly one thing to know what needs to be done. It's another thing to sort of smash those silos that might be evident in organizations today. So what advice would you have for them?
One key piece of advice, and I referred to this a little earlier, is in order to maintain current relationships, it requires a much more proactive strategy. We have our clients in across a range of industries that do a vulnerability analysis, and we have them look for early warning signs. Some of them are generic, such as the customer no longer returns your phone call or asks you questions that you answered 2 years ago, or starts treating you like a stranger rather than family. But a lot of them are industry-specific, such as in the banking industry, they using their checking account less frequently or not asking you for letters of credit, et cetera, as frequently. So look for vulnerabilities and conduct account reviews to remind the client, the customer, of the benefits you're providing, and look for future opportunities in these account reviews. And then finally, we advise most companies to establish customer advisory boards where they can stay closer to their customers and, you know, shower appreciation and attention on them so that they constantly have their pulse on the marketplace. The last thing I would mention is that the companies that are making the transition are the ones where the senior executive staff is spending a lot more time out in the field with customers, not just ones to thank them, but ones that are, you know, resisting purchasing their product or service, so they really fully appreciate the challenges their first-line sales team faces.
Well, those are all really great ideas, things that our company can start immediately trying to implement within their organizations. So certainly, it's a great starting point. And these all have been really great insights. And so thank you, Ron, for all of them. We've been talking to Ron Volper today. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening to this edition of our AMA podcast series. I hope it's been a good learning and listening experience for you. Look for information on other upcoming podcasts by visiting marketingpower.com/podcast. And make sure you sign up for the RSS feed on Marketing Power so you're aware of all of the podcast series available to you. You can also learn more on this topic, Up Your Sales in the Down Market, through Ron's book called Up Your Sales in the Down Market, Winning Over Cautious Customers. Until next time, I've been your host, Nancy Piccalo. Thanks for joining us.